Ramsey TV.
Before I tell you about the novel, Goddess of Nazareth, I wanted to explain to you more about the cover of Shaga. I want to show you a close-up of that and explain that to you. Then I'm going to explain the cover of Goddess of Nazareth. I'm going to read some excerpts from that. You're all going to love it. I want you to order all three of these books. Go to my homepage, martinzender.com, and you will see how to order these books. You will not be disappointed. I know these are not, well, except for The Lie of Every Man's Battle, these are not strictly scriptural books, although Shaga does contain, of course, scriptural explanations for why there is such attraction between the sexes. And it also, as I told you yesterday, in that long lost forgotten passage, Proverbs 5, 19 and 20, the wisest man in the world is telling his son that he should be inebriated, intoxicated with his wife continuously. This sentence from Proverbs smacks of sexual intoxication. Love is not about intoxication. So this passage from Proverbs 5, 19, 20, why, my son, should you be intoxicated with an alien woman when you can be intoxicated with your wife? It's not about love. It's about sex. Because again, this idea of losing it has nothing to do with love. So here's a close-up of the cover of Shaga. The trick was to invent a cover that would appeal to both men and women. Because when you see sexual-oriented books for couples, and when they're aimed toward women, you usually see a nice romantic picture on the cover, maybe a husband and wife making salad together in the kitchen, and women just swoon over it. Oh, isn't that nice? Men look at it, and they say, what is this? This is a book about sex? You're kidding me. But on the other hand, the books that are aimed toward men tend to have a woman in lingerie. There's a popular book out called Why Men Love Bitches, and it's got, of course, a very erotic photo on the cover. Men love it. Women look at that and go, ugh, they roll their eyes, and they don't want any part of it. I had to come up with a cover that both men and women would dig, so I like to think that the men are going to look at this cover and say, ooh, look, honey, this man is kneeling in front of his woman. And I want the women to say, oh, look, honey, this man is kneeling in front of his woman. Ha ha, there you go. It's symbiosis, where both parties get something out of the same situation. They get different things. Men are the givers, women are the receivers. This is the way it is anatomically. And it's also the way it is when we're dealing with the emotions of sexual attraction. Here's the back cover. I like this phrase, the battle of the sexes is over and everybody wins. I got a great review here from Frank Whalen of the Republic Broadcasting Network. He says this is a social, sexual, and spiritual masterpiece. It's the answer. I can't argue with that. All right, now I'm going to tell you about a novel that I wrote, the first novel I ever wrote. I have written two, and the second one is typeset and it will be coming out. That's a really wild novel. I'm going to tell you about that sometime, but not today. Goddess of Nazareth, the intimate conflicts of Israel's most famous couple. My passion here was to make these people real. Joseph and Mary were real people. They had real emotions, real desires. They were just like us. We don't think that. We think that, oh, Mary must have been floating a foot off the ground. She was chosen by God. But no, she was flesh and blood. She was a human woman. Joseph was a human man, and they had an intimate relationship. After the birth of the Messiah, Jesus had brothers and sisters. So what about that intimate relationship? I'd like to know about it, wouldn't you? There's nothing written about it. Aha, perfect opportunity for a novelist. And so I had so much fun, really, writing this book, except for one thing. Ladies and gentlemen, I didn't write it. No, this book is written by Joseph and Mary themselves. If you look at the cover, you look at the back cover, You don't see my name anywhere. That's why this book, that's because this book is written by Joseph and Mary to their contemporaries. They are writing this to their contemporaries, and it's a book about how husbands and wives can get along better and how they can make their diverse needs, wants, and desires meet, how they can find the middle ground and satisfy each other. And because they're writing about their lives, you also get a backstage glance at the significant things that happen in their lives. All of the historical events of Joseph and Mary's life are in this novel. Of course, the census, the trip to Bethlehem, before that, the Annunciation, the dream Joseph received. I just fill in the blanks, but all the historical details are there. But I humanize these people. I do give them a bit of a Western, I give them Western sensibilities. They have their favorite restaurants. They have their pets. They have their in-laws. And so they're completely human. And it is a joy to read because I figure if people read this book and they see that Joseph and Mary has some of the same struggles they have in their marriage, it'll give them some sense of relief that these people did not live some idyllic life. Just because they were called by God for an epic task doesn't mean they weren't human beings. Of course, they were. And we are called by God to an epic task as members of the body of Christ. So should we expect anything different? Our lives are drab sometimes, boring sometimes, disappointing. We have conflicts with our loved ones. And when you see that sometimes this is as good as it gets, you see that with Joseph and Mary. Sometimes it's as good as it gets. Here's a close-up of the cover. And you can see that my goal was to juxtapose the ancient with the modern. So I have the ancient tableau back there, the traditional scene at the creche, Joseph, Mary, and the baby Jesus. And then in the foreground, I have an artist's conception, my conception of what these people looked like. Now, for the Joseph, this is just some inside information. For the Joseph dude, I bought this model on a photo stock site called canstock.com, but I couldn't find Mary. I knew what I wanted because I written about her. Of course, I write both Joseph and Mary's part. Oh, the great thing about this book is like Mary writes, then Joseph writes, then Mary writes, then Joseph writes. And sometimes many times they're writing about the same event, but they have completely different viewpoints of the same event. It's so humorous, and it was like God worked a miracle with me because I was able to put myself in the female point of view, and I was able to inhabit Mary. Don't know how that happened, but it did. You will see this. And she has her sensibilities. Joseph has his. He thinks about sex a lot. She is a very spiritual person. Her family is very proud of their lineage, and they're a little bit uppity. They're a little bit self-righteous. Joseph is a working man. Mary's father doesn't respect him. And so when these two come together, it's like the clash of the titans. He has a more earthly bend. She's all spiritually oriented. And so these two have to find a way to coexist, and they do. This book is very satisfying. So I couldn't find Mary. I'm looking through this canstockphotos.com. I'm looking at, you know, hundreds of female models. I just don't see her. And then I was talking to my typesetter, the woman who typeset this book, Catherine Quintero Torres. And, of course, I had her sister from Bogota, Colombia, had come to visit up here in the States a few times. And for some reason, we were looking at photos, and I saw a photo of her sister, Catherine's sister, Aleja. And I said, that's Mary. That's her. This photo already existed. So the Mary you see here is actually Alejandra Quintero Torres, and she was perfect. And I asked her for permission to use her photo. She gave me her permission. And I said, don't you want to read the book first? She said, no, that's okay. I'm thrilled to be on the cover. I said, okay, you don't want to read the book first. No, so but she's reading it now. I signed a copy for her. And here I am. Here's a picture of me presenting the book to her. I got a nice kiss out of it, which never a bad thing. That was splendid. So, again, I didn't know I could write a novel, but it turns out I could. I remember walking, I was living in Greenwich, Ohio at the time. This was 2005. I wrote this in 2005. I would walk to work at 4:30 a.m. I would get to work. I'd brew some coffee. Then I'd go outside Greenwich, Ohio. It's a one-horse town, not even one traffic light. We were excited to get a stop sign in the town. It was a big event. I would sit on the front stoop of my downtown building. I was upstairs above the post office, and it was so quiet in this town. You could hear the bank sign change the time. You know, when it switched from time to temperature, the electronic bank. Yeah, we had electricity, yes. You could hear it click over, click, time, temperature, time, temperature. It was so quiet. Then I would go upstairs, and I dedicated myself to writing 1,000 to 2,000 words a day. And by God, I could write a novel. And I felt inspired. I truly believe God inspired this novel. So you're going to enjoy how these people are so human. One event that really delights me is, you see, when Gabriel visited Mary, and you're going to love that scene. You are going to love it. It happens after she has dinner with her family, and she's walking down the hallway to the bathroom, and her parents have already gone to bed. She has coffee in the evening, so she's pretty awake, and she senses that there is someone in the bathroom. Anyway, that's very exciting. But after the Annunciation, Gabriel told her, you know, no sex. He says, you're betrothed to a man. She says, yes. But he says, no sex until the baby is born, right? Yes, Lord, she says. So fast forward a few months later, Joseph and Mary are on their honeymoon. And I'm going to read a passage from that. I don't know if these Bible people went on honeymoons, but as I said, I modernize them. I give them modern attitudes, modern way of thinking, Western ways of thinking, so you can relate to them. And they're on their honeymoon, and things are getting a little heated in their Caesarean apartment, their hotel where Joseph took them. And things are getting, as I said, a little sexually heated, and Mary has to stop Joseph. Whoa, 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 whoa. Gabriel said, no sex until Jesus is born. And Joseph, typical man, says, oh, what exactly did Gabriel mean by sex? And so this humorous conversation ensues. You're going to love that passage. Joseph takes them to Caesarea. He books a resort hotel for them in this seaside city that was really, to the Jews, a city of sin. It was the home of Herod, and yet it was exotic, which Joseph liked the big cities, and he insisted that he take his newly married wife to Caesarea. This is Mary speaking about entering the Herodian. The Herodian is the name of the hotel that they spend their honeymoon in. A heavy door of glass and gold revolved in front of us. It spun as men and women charged through it. They arrive here at midnight, by the way. They take a carriage from Nazareth. They arrive in Caesarea. And Mary is startled at the big city. A heavy door of glass and gold revolved in front of us. It spun as men and women charged through it. I'd never seen such a thing. How do we go through this, Joseph? He said, I think we just go. And so we pushed our way into it. Joseph shoving me through in front of him. So much adventure already, just coming into the door. The lobby of the Herodian was beautiful. Persian rugs of various colors and patterns lay as one, showing not a trace of bare floor beneath. Gold spittoons, sleek glass statues, and many, many exotic ferns and palms decorated the lobby. There were many richly upholstered chairs and sofas lining the walls, and a considerable area in the corner roped off where people drank alcohol, I assume, from odd-looking glasses. I was amazed at all the people not in bed. Everywhere I looked, people gathered in small conclaves, engaged in exciting conversations. There seemed to be not even a thought of retiring for the night. Only a very few people sat off by themselves, reading newspapers and books. I thought it funny that the men reading, almost without exception, smoked pipes. The porter marched us to the front desk, and Joseph fetched some coins and gave them to him. How did he know to do that? I was so glad that Joseph was with me. He knew about things like tipping porters, buying newspapers, operating strange doors, and reserving apartments in fancy foreign places. I held onto his arm. It was so big and strong. Joseph liked it, I could tell. I felt so helpless here in Caesarea, and I had to admit, I liked the feeling. I liked the feeling when I was with Joseph, that is. Here's Joseph's account. I'd never seen a revolving door in my life, but I think I did a fair job negotiating us through it. I got us into the Herodian without hobbling either of us, so our evening was off to a grand start. I had no idea what to tip the porter, so I just grabbed a handful of coins, counted them on the run, and handed them over. I tried to judge by his face how well I had tipped him. I'd never been to a place like this. I'd never been to a place this nice, so how would I know? The porter lauded me with such gratitude that his face turned red. Okay, I thought, next time, not so much. I leaned up against the front desk and rang a black-handled bell. A young woman appeared and asked for our names, giving me the opportunity for the first time ever to say, Mr. and Mrs. Joseph Gebrecki. Mary and I both fondled the sound of it. The clerk acted like she knew us and hustled around the corner, returning, carrying the largest basket of fruit either of us had ever seen. She set it on the counter and told us it was ours. Mary and I babbled like, well, fruit babblers. The clerk must have thought we've never seen a pineapple. We were just so flattered and surprised is all. There was a card on the basket, and I read it out loud. Quote, to the happiest couple in God's universe, grace and peace to you, Mom and Pop Van Holden, and several neighbors, whoever we could squeeze a mite out of. We laughed because we knew that Mary's mother had written the card. The clerk asked if it was our anniversary. It's our honeymoon, I said. We were married not 5 hours ago in Nazareth. Gerges! This is what the clerk shouted then, and I thought maybe I'd said something wrong. I thought maybe Gerges was a Caesarean curse word, but a velvety, rust-colored man soon appeared as noiselessly as a human could. Gerges escort Joseph and Mary to the honeymoon suite, apartment 202, upstairs. What? What's this? I hadn't reserved a suite. Mr. and Mrs. Gebrecki, this is a gift to you from the Herodian. And here, you will need this. She reached under the desk and hauled a log onto the counter for the fireplace. Mary raised her eyebrows. Welcome to the Herodian of Caesarea, said the clerk. If you need another log, just stop down. We have as many as you need. And here's your towels and washcloths and 2 bars of scented soap and several of the newest fashion magazines from Rome and a package of chocolate bars. Her arm was a blur of product and scented soap. Oh, I see I've already given you that, but take this anyway. The honeymoon candles are in the room in the sconces next to the dining room table. But here are your matches and a complimentary bottle of wine. Please drink responsibly. And the corkscrew is in the drawer next to the coffee maker. All we could do was thank and thank that woman and say gushing things about how royal the Herodian made us feel. At the Herodian of Caesarea, you are royalty. 3 days? Excellent. Gerges will now escort you to your apartment. The rust and velvet Gerges stepped forward militarily and swept our newest worldly possessions onto a cart that he pushed before him across silent carpets. Mary squeezed my arm with such delight that I pranced. I waggled. I strutted. It would all mean another tip, but I was willing to give Gerges everything. And now here's Mary. Our apartment wasn't an apartment. It was a house. Joseph, just look at this place. It went on forever, room after room. There was a living room, a separate kitchen, a bedroom, a bathroom, even a walk-in closet. I opened every door in a flurry of investigation. My first thought was to check out the bathroom. It was so clean. You can't imagine how clean the bathroom is, I said. I've never seen a cleaner one. I'm serious. Not even Elizabeth keeps her bathroom so tidy. And what smells so good? I think it's orchids. I want orchids for our bathroom. Joseph? It's perfect, isn't it? Just listen to the sea, love. Close your eyes. It's hypnotizing. Joseph had called me out onto the veranda, and there's something hypnotic about you, too. He said, you're the most beautiful woman in the world. I bet you say that to all the girls on verandas at the Herodian, I said. Only to the most beautiful ones. Well, let's see if we can start something in the fireplace, said Mary. Or next to it, said Joseph. While Mary smelled the bathroom, I found a door that opened to a veranda. How perfect was this? Our room overlooked the sea. Mary finally came out with me and we listened to the surf. I wanted to kiss her right there, but it seemed too fast. Maybe the way she stood so much facing the sea made me hesitate. I knew she liked the fireplace, so I decided on a fire. It took me 45 minutes to light that stupid fire. The log wouldn't catch, so I rolled up some villa advertising and finally got something going. It was good to have something to do, really. Mary kept talking about the bathroom. We both talked about the fire, about how we could keep it going, and how maybe we should go down and get a couple more logs now, before it got too late. Mary had settled into a chair. Now, Mary, we finally had the fire going, though it must have taken an hour. Joseph got upset about it, even though it was only a fire, but I guess he wanted it to be a good fire. Or any fire. Finally, it was filling the room with beautiful light. It was overly warm, but we didn't care. I loved to hear a fire crackling, always. I closed my eyes and was beginning to relax. Then I heard Joseph say, "Mary, you are so beautiful." Now, Joseph, I moved to my knees. I moved on my knees to her. "Don't fall asleep on me," I said. "You're too beautiful for that." I enclosed her with my arms on the sides of her chair and moved toward her. She opened her eyes, and the dark mystery of her overwhelmed me again, as it had behind that veil in Nazareth. Oh, what her gaze did to me. I sat lightly upon her legs, straddle fashion, then, moving my face close to hers, breathed softly and carefully onto her mouth. Then, with the tip of my tongue, I slowly began licking her lips. A deep kiss wanted to come, but it wasn't the time. I licked her lips as gently as I could. Her breathing quickened. I licked in wider circles outside her mouth, barely touching along her chin, then up her smooth cheek. When I knew she was enjoying it, I pressed harder and made wider circles away from her mouth. Now I was licking her eyes, touching them gently with my tongue. Her eyes were closed, and I tasted the delicate paints of her lids. I imbibed of her scents. I grasped Mary's head between both my hands and sniffed her, easily at first, then deeply. Nuzzling my nose into her hair, I inhaled it. A surge of pleasure came. I groaned into her ear. She rocked her hips into the chair. I was freed now, and I licked her harder. I grasped her harder with my hands, pushing and pulling her hair into my mouth. Her head was so small in my hands. My tongue then moved down her neck. My licks elongated, and I thickened them along the length of her neck. I craned my own neck in stronger strokes to taste the smoothness of hers. Then a deep sound came from her own lips, and she told me to kiss her. Now, Mary, I had never been drunk before, but it must feel like this, I thought. Joseph was doing things to me. He began licking my lips, then my eyes, then my hair. My first instinct was to stop him, but it was too much pleasure. He smelled my hair and licked it. A man is licking my hair, I thought. My mouth was open. All I wanted was for him to kiss me. I moved for his mouth, but he kept moving it away. How this aroused me! Joseph circled and circled me. I wanted it so much now that I grabbed fistfuls of his hair and begged for him to kiss me. Ooh, it goes on from there, my friends. It goes on from there. It's a wonderful chapter. I love the chapter. It's pretty funny what happens next. So you're going to enjoy that when you read it. I'll close by telling you the history of this novel. After I finished it, which I couldn't believe I had done, I thought, why not start at the top? So I sent a query letter and 50 words, small section of the novel, to the biggest, most famous literary agency in New York City called Writer's House. I told you I sent Shaga to International Creative Management. That was also a big agency. But I sent this to Writer's House, sent it to Dan Lazar. This was, again, going to bat at Yankee Stadium. This was the big time. Little guy, from Greenwich, Ohio, wrote a novel, sending it to New York City. These people don't care if you live or die. They only want to sell books. So I emailed a query letter telling him about the concept, and I sent him like 50 sample words, thinking maybe in a month I'll hear from these people. It's a long shot, very long shot. The next day, ladies and gentlemen, the next day, the phone rang in my office above the post office in Greenwich, Ohio. It was Dan Lazar of Writer's House. I could not believe he was calling me. He said, "Mr. Zender." "Yes, sir." My voice was shaking a little bit. "I really like what you sent me. Can you send me the first 50 pages of the novel? Send it to me as an attachment in an email." "Yes, sir." Send him the 50 pages. The next day, ding-a-ling-a-ling. "Zender." "Yes, sir." "I love this. This is something I've never seen before. Send me the entire novel, kid." I'm shaking. I'm like, this is unreal. I sent him the entire novel. 5 days went by. Ding-a-ling-a-ling. "Dan Lazar here. I'm going to sell this thing. This is so funny. It's so creative. It's so engaging. I love Mary's parents. They're hilarious." Blah, blah, blah. Went on and on. This was the procuring agent. He said, "I'm going to give this to my boss, Simon Lipscar. He's the guy that's going to either accept you as a client and will try to sell this book to a mainstream publisher or not." And I said, "Let it rip, my friend. Let it rip." He was my friend now. So Dan Lazar sends it, gives it to his boss. I wait 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days. I'm a wreck, kind of. Dan Lazar calls me after 5 days. He said, "Well," I'm thinking, "oh, shit." He said, "The manuscript was on my desk this morning with a note from Simon." I said, "Okay, lay it on me." And I'll never forget the words of that note. This is what they said. Dan read it to me, of course, on the phone. "Inventive, funny, possibly even brilliant, but ultimately not for me." I'm like, "What?" Dan says, "Don't worry, don't worry, don't worry. I know other people in the business. This thing, it's going to sell. Don't worry. I know other people." See, what I didn't realize at the time is that New York publishing not only consists of feminists, liberals, but also lots of Israel types, mainly Israel types. And there are some things in this book that might offend Israel types. Anyway, he says, "I know this woman named Mary Geddes. I'm going to send this manuscript to her. Just hang loose, Zender. I'm going to get back with you." So 1 day goes by, 2, 3, 4, 5. I eventually hear from him. He says, "Okay, Mary read it." I said, "Yes." He said this. He said, quote, "Mary told me," quote, "she loved it as a reader, but she doesn't feel she can sell it as a publisher." I thought, "What?" But the potential recipients of this book are all readers. If she loved it, why doesn't she think other people will love it? And then I got this revelation about New York publishing. Are you ready for this? This was a shock to me. I'm ultimately glad it happened because now I still own the rights to this thing. When you sell a book to a mainstream publisher, as the author, like, you only get 20%. The agent gets 20%. The house gets 60%. It's just a ripoff for the writer. Nobody would be there if it weren't for the writer. Nevertheless, anyway, this is what he said. He said, "You know," he said, "I just started in this business not long ago." He said, "I've discovered something, and that is that we say that we want groundbreaking work. We say that we want original work. We say that we want something that's never been done before. But if anyone sends us a manuscript that is truly original, that has truly never been done before, and that has no precedent," he said, "it will never sell in this town." I said, "What? Why?" He says, "Because they won't take a chance on something that hasn't been done before. They will not invest money on any project that doesn't have a rut, that hasn't already been done. He says, I know that's startling. I hate to tell you this, but because your book is original, they don't want to take a chance on it. And I was flabbergasted. You mean to tell me that a little guy from Greenwich, Ohio, has written a novel that is too unique or too possibly controversial for New York City? He said, that's correct. And he said, you know, I can help you reshape this thing. I said, okay, how? I said, I'm willing to change some things. Just take the sex out of it. I'm like, what? No. I said, I'm willing to work with you, sir. I'm willing to change things. I'm not like married to every word that I wrote, but if you take the sex out of it, you take the lifeblood out of it. This is about Joseph and Mary's intimate relationship. And so it was controversial. It was too controversial. I wrote something too controversial for New York City. But this was before the days of the Da Vinci Code. So I think the market has probably loosened up since then. This was like 2005, 2006. But, you know, I got a little bit discouraged. I said, well, the heck with it. You know, it made waves. He said, Martin, don't worry. This is going to get published. This is, the writing is just too good. I'm just quoting a guy. And so that was that. The joy for me is in the writing. But now, in the timing of God, it's time to get this book out. And so I am loving for you to read this. I want you to read this. It is entertainment par excellence. And I see a screenplay here. I wrote this novel seeing it on the screen. I just wrote what I saw. There was a movie about Joseph and Mary made, I think, in 1996 called The Nativity. It was so stilted, so artificial, so stiff. These people talk like Bible people. Thou art the fair one. There's none of this stuff happening looking out the veranda, him kissing her legs and funny things going. It's in-laws, restaurants. No. All these people are just so formal and so stiff. It makes you want to gag. I watch The Nativity. It's like, you're kidding me. This movie would be so great. So great. Goddess of Nazareth. I can see it on the marquee. I can see it. I can see me walking up to the Academy Awards for accepting the Oscar for Best Original Screenplay. Now, I'm not confident or anything in this work, but anyway, you know, I gave up on all that back in the day. Right now, what a writer wants, he just wants to be read. I just want this freaking book to be read, and I'll be happy. I'm not in it anymore for wealth and fame. No, I'm long past that crap. I still think it'd make a hell of a screenplay. If anybody wants to buy the rights to the book to write a screenplay, I studied screenwriting back in the day, and I know I could do this. Screenwriting is amazing. You can write a screenplay is 110 pages, generally, give or take a few pages. There's definitely a structure to it. It's so amazing that you take 110 pieces of paper that are just empty, blank, by themselves are worth what, maybe $4. But if you put the right words in the right order on those 110 pages, you could sell it for $1 million. I mean, it's just amazing. It's what's on the page that counts. I know I could do this, but I just lost, you know, I've just lost something. I've lost the enthusiasm for it. If anybody wants to light my fire again, all right, you're welcome to try. Anyway, those are the three books. Go to my website, martinzenner.com. Order all three of them. They're all three related. Again, The Lie of Every Man's Battle is scriptural as heck. It's got verse after verse after verse. It's a scholarly work right up there with The First Idiot in Heaven, explaining to you why the Christian religion is on the wrong track and trying to eliminate sex from God's universe. Then you have Shaga that'll explain you how to make these principles work in your marriage, reignite your sex life in a way that you could never dream possible. I mean, I was more excited, more intensely hot for my wife of 20 years than I was when I first met her. Incredible. This works, I'm telling you. And the couples that have tried this, they say, it's amazing. It's so powerful. Men are kind of scared of it. Men are a little bit scared of it because they're handing over the keys to their kingdom. But they say, this is the most exciting thing I've ever heard. But Martin, this is a dangerous proposition in the hands of a wrong woman. Hey, don't I know it? But sometimes you just got to take a chance. How bad do you want it? I don't know. So anyway, go to martinzenner.com, order all three books, and then you get entertained by Goddess of Nazareth. So many surprises in this book. I haven't even giving you just, I'm just giving you the barest hint of the fun and the, but it's not a raunchy book. Don't take this the wrong way. This is a classy book. It's an adult book, but it's not raunchy. No. It's reverent. It's funny. It's stylistic, and it brings these people to life to the point where I thought they were real. I mean, I thought they were real. I'm writing this novel, and like these people are surprising me, and I'm just following what they're doing. I'm like chasing them in this novel, like, oh my gosh, look what Mary did now. It seemed like the logical thing for her to do. You know, she's at Elizabeth, and she takes a nap, and her mouth gets dry when she sleeps, and her hair's all stringy, and she hates how she looks. And it's just so human, so freaking human. These people drink coffee. Yes, they drink coffee. They have pets. So much fun. Anyway, that's that. Tomorrow, I'm going to bring you another conference talk that you have not heard yet by yours truly at the Richmond Conference. You have that to look forward to tomorrow, and I'm going to take a breath, but I'll be back.